The Lord. That was a blessing. Ship Ahoy is my husband's favorite song, and he was my favorite sailor up here. He's back there. I hope he got to hear it. What a blessing. What a blessing it is to be here. I am already so encouraged by all of you. I'm so thankful to see you. I'm so thankful I didn't fall coming up the steps today. I have a reputation of fellowship with the floor, and I was really hoping that that would not happen this week. We were at breakfast this morning, and we were at a beautiful bed and breakfast, and we had to go downstairs to the breakfast room, and coming back up on the steps, I was stepping on the bottom of my dress, and my husband said, "Pull that up. We don't need any hazards before the conference." So my son told me that he was going to bubble wrap me one time. I thank the Lord that among the broken bones that I have had, he's healed them. I can stand vertically. I can walk up and down the steps. And we're here today. I'm so thankful to be here. The nautical theme is very close to my heart, very near and dear to my heart. I grew up right on the shores of Lake Huron, one of the Great Lakes in Michigan. I don't know if you're familiar with the state of Michigan. When I was a child, I thought that everyone knew where Michigan was. If you looked at the map, it's the only mitten. I mean, when God made the United States of America, he put his hand right there, you know. And when I went away to college and found out that people didn't know that the shape of Michigan was a mitten, I was like, how could you not know? Even from space, you could see that, you know. So I'm very fond of my home state, but I'm also very fond. Pennsylvania is my adopted home state. I've lived here longer than I ever lived in Michigan, so I'm thankful for it. Thankful for a husband that was from Pennsylvania, a Pennsylvania farm boy, and that is where we live now. I live in western Pennsylvania over by Greensburg and Pittsburgh, and I love that too, even with our crazy weather. I love that too. So let's get on to our sessions today. I hope you brought your basket. Years ago, it feels like back when dinosaurs roamed the earth, but it seems so long ago now that I taught school. I taught elementary school for about 20 years. And every year we would go to a conference, a teacher's conference, and I looked forward to that tremendously. I always felt like, oh, hopefully there's some new idea, some way I could do better at classroom management, and there always was. But sometimes, as teachers are not rookies anymore, and they've tried all the ideas that came from the conference, sometimes I would hear a teacher say, "Boy, I could really use these 2 days at home. I'd like to just stay home instead of go to the conference." And I understood that, but I can say that I never felt that way. I always wanted to get something from the conference. And I remember thinking, I used this basket on my desk at school. You know, you have to keep elementary school children guessing all the time. And when I would come to school, I never revealed the contents until the appropriate time. But this basket was on my desk, and I would have something special, not all the time, but something special in the basket for everybody to see. They looked forward to that tremendously, and I'm just pulling out the things that I'm going to use in this session. But I remember taking that idea and thinking, I'm just going to go to that conference with an empty basket. And whatever I can get, whatever takeaways I can get, I'm going to put in that basket and take them home with me. Sometimes it wouldn't even be a workshop leader that had the great idea. Sometimes it was just one of the teachers I was sitting in the classroom with and would say, oh, you should try this or do this and you'll get good results. And so you're not going to remember everything from all the sessions today, but if you get one takeaway or two takeaways that you can throw in an empty basket and take home with you and then be refreshed by when you get home, I hope that'll be the case for you. I hope that you'll have a couple of takeaways from what we're going to talk about today. All right, let's get back to talking about my favorite home state of Michigan. I'll tell you a little bit about myself, then we'll get right into the lesson. Oh, before we do that, Captain Fry, he used some of the nautical expressions that I was going to share with you today, so we'll use a couple different ones. In everyday conversation, we use nautical expressions, and we may or may not even know that that came from a nautical item or from the Navy or just from shipping. So the first one I want to share with you is batten down the hatches. Has anyone ever heard that one? That's a familiar one, yes. And it's a phrase used to prepare for a storm, or in everyday language, prepare for a difficult situation. You know, batten down the hatches. You know, trouble's coming. We heard aye, aye, Captain. That means yes, yes, Captain. I saw a sign when I was doing my study. It said the captain is always right. I'm sure he is. Fair winds and following seas. That's another good expression. That what that phrase means is that it's someone is wishing you well on your journey. Bon voyage is another one, but fair winds and following seas. And what that means is that they're wishing you fair winds that will carry you home, and following seas that will push you along, and that you won't be going against the current, you'll go along with the current. Shipshape. I've used that one on my children with their bedrooms. And we heard all hands on deck this morning. The last one I'll share right here is keel over. Have you ever heard that? We've heard it usually in an expression that means we feel like we're going to go over. But the keel over term is used to describe a boat who has, a boat isn't a who, but you know what I mean, has gone over on its side and almost capsized. In everyday language, it refers to someone who is falling or tumbling over. They've gone keel over. We'll leave off with that one. All right. Michigan is called the Great Lakes State. Pennsylvania is the Keystone State. Every state has their nickname. I loved being part of the Great Lakes State. Michigan is a peninsula. And I'm just going to give you, the whole thing's not going to be geography, I promise you. Michigan is a peninsula in the shape of a mitten, but that's just the lower peninsula. So I'm going to hold my hand up. Please forgive me. You know, when you're from Michigan, let's do it this way. When you're from Michigan and you meet another Michigander, are you a Michigander? She knows. Oh, and I'm right here. Yes. You can always know that person by telling them, pointing to where you grew up in the mitten. So I was born in Detroit down here. My dad was a Detroit policeman. During the riots of the civil rights movement in 1968, he moved us, our family, north, out of the city of Detroit, up to the port city of Port Huron, which is right on Lake Huron. It's a wonderful place. To experience, and I would encourage you, if you ever can go to Michigan, to go visit in that area. The peninsula is surrounded on three sides by Great Lakes, and the Great Lakes, if you ever wonder, if you don't know what they are, you can think of the acronym HOMES, and then you'll know the names of them. H-O-M-E-S, Lake Huron, Lake Ontario for O, M is for Michigan, E, that's a Great Lake that we share with Michigan, Pennsylvania does, and then S, Superior. You, You are A1 students. You get a gold star. Along with the Lower Peninsula, now I'm going to have to switch hands because I have to do this. There's the Upper Peninsula. And what connects the Lower Peninsula to the Upper Peninsula is the Mackinac Bridge, or the Mighty Mack. It's a suspension bridge that's 5 miles long. It used to be one of the longest suspension bridges in the world. I don't know if it is anymore, or in the United States. I don't know if that's still the case, but that Mackinac Bridge is famous. Now, if you live under the bridge, if you live in the Lower Peninsula, can anyone guess what you're called? A troll, that's right. Was that my... You're a troll. You're under the bridge. And if you live in the Upper Peninsula, you're a youper, because that's right. Overachievers. Yep. All right. So I'm going to move on from teaching you all about Michigan, but now you'll have a little bit of history. The side of Michigan that I grew up on was the Lake Huron side. Up here is Lake Superior, and over here is Lake Michigan, as I'm sure most of you know. When I need a Great Lakes fix, and we can't drive all the way home to Michigan, I just tell my husband, I really need to see the Great Lakes, and so we'll go to Lake Erie. And I get that same feeling, same enjoyment. When we moved to Port Huron, we lived only one block from Lighthouse Beach. The lighthouse was the Fort Gratiot Lighthouse. And it looked almost identical. It looks almost identical to this lighthouse, except it's a cylinder. It's round. And it's the Fort Gratiot Lighthouse. It was the very first lighthouse built in Michigan during 1829. And the person that was the engineer for the lighthouse was named Charles Gratiot, so they named the lighthouse after him. He was an architect for the War of 1812. And that fort was right there, and they guarded the lakes during the war. So that's that history. Along with the Fort Gratiot Lighthouse, there's the Foghorn Building. The Foghorn is not on the lighthouse. It's in a separate building. And the Coast Guard Station, and we're going to talk more about all of that in another session. Now, that was the first lighthouse in Michigan. Now there are 120 lighthouses all the way around the shoreline of Michigan, and that's more than any other state, even the states that are on the eastern and the western coasts. Michigan has 129. The Great Lakes are known for having some difficult passageways, some difficult under the water shoals and different things like that. We'll talk about that in a minute. From spring through about early November, the Great Lakes Shipping Company and many other shipping companies use that shipping corridor all through the Great Lakes. And the way they do that is with freighters. Are you familiar? That was me, wasn't it? Sorry. I told Zach that I move a little and I might have trouble with my hands. Sorry about that. Those ships travel that shipping corridor. I can't do it. They travel that shipping corridor. And those freighters are a daily sight. And as a child, it's a very exciting thing to go to the beach and be playing in the sand. And you can, if I would look to my right, I could see the lighthouse. And I could see the beautiful Blue Water Bridge that went from the city of Port Huron over to Canada. And so that was exciting. I lived right where the St. Clair River and the St. Clair Lake open up into Lake Huron. So Canada was right across the shore from us. And that was exciting for many reasons. I'll tell you about that as well. But if we knew the bow was coming under the bridge, the kids would all start jumping up and down and being excited because we knew that the freighter would create real waves for us, you know. There are many great things about the Great Lakes, not the least of which it's no salt. It's a freshwater lake, all of them. And then the other thing, no sharks. No Jellyfish. Yeah, those. Whoa. No jellyfish to sting you. And it's crystal clear. You can stand and look down. You can stand in water up to here and look down and see your feet. And it's beautiful. It's many shades of blue. I'm a little biased, but they didn't name it the Blue Water Bridge because it wasn't blue water. So now you know. All right, so those ships would pass by, and we would see those waves start to roll in. The big propeller would create these waves, and we loved it. It wasn't a wave like the ocean, but it certainly was enough to knock you down if you weren't paying attention. Those freighters have hatches. They're about 1,000 feet long. They're very, very long. They're very exciting to watch. And so at the back of the ship is the helm, not at the front, but at the back. This is where the captain and the crew are, and the bow is here, and then about 35 hatches all the way along the deck. And so those hatches, if they don't batten down the hatches, and one is leaking or one is open, well, what will happen? Water will get in and become a problem. We want the water on the outside of the ship, not on the inside of the ship. All right, and one more thing that's very special about Lake Huron, and I didn't even learn this in grade school. I think I was an adult when I learned this, but about 2,000 feet below the surface of the Great Lake Huron are salt mines. It's an amazing, you can look it up on YouTube. It's an amazing thing to see. A shaft had to be drilled down under the Great Lake through that rock that is just has to be blasted. And I don't know who discovered this salt and how they discovered it, but that shaft goes down, and there are trucks and electricity and Wi-Fi 2,000 feet under the surface of the Great Lake. It's amazing to think about. The salt that they mine from underneath the Great Lakes becomes road salt and table salt by the Morton Salt Company. So if you're driving on the road, you're probably driving over a salt mined from Michigan or eating it on your corn on the cob. All right, now you know plenty about my home state, but we're going to refer back to those important things here, especially those freighters, in just a minute. But I looked up, what is the name for a female sailor? And it said sailor. But the other name, the other name can be Jenny Wrens. So you can call yourself a Jenny Wren today, or you can call yourself a sailor. But for our purposes, we're going to all be sailors and Jenny Wrens as we take that journey that Captain Fry talked about. And, you know, in all seriousness, we're on a journey that's going to take us the rest of our lives. We travel the sea of life, so to speak. Even though Lake Huron is called a Great Lake, it's if you stand on the shore, not where Canada is, but you can't see to the other side. It's just like standing at the ocean. No salt spray, though. But we will, on this sea of water, sea of life, we'll experience all the joys and all the hardships that come. And we've already experienced those things. But I think it would be wise for us to prepare for this journey from here out. So let's do that. We're going to talk about becoming a proper sailor. So, and this is a definition from the Navigation Register. The first thing for a proper sailor is to know the captain. It is critical for a sailor to know, trust, and understand his captain, because the captain holds the ultimate responsibility for safety, navigation, and command decisions aboard ship. Another name for the captain is the commander. I'm sure you've heard that before. The sailor knows the captain's name and usually is aware of his reputation. That's important to a sailor. If a sailor is assigned, and by the way, they are assigned to their ships. So if a sailor is assigned to a ship and he knows the captain has a reputation for being a tough taskmaster, he may or may not appreciate that. more times than not, he will appreciate it. But if he's a lazy captain, if he's a captain that doesn't look out for the crew, that's not going to garner goodwill out of the sailors. It's not going to make them want to be willing to take orders, is it? So the reputation is important. And I'd like you to think for a minute about our captain. If you're a believer, if you're a Christian, you know the captain of our salvation. It's the Lord Jesus Christ. We know his name. It's the name that is above every name. And we know his reputation. He's the friend of sinners. He's the light of the world. I'm so thankful that the same theme verse we have is the verse for the church, and they've been working on it. Psalm 27:1, the Lord is my light and my salvation, of whom shall I be afraid? I'm telling you, I was thankful for that verse. I was thankful for that verse all year long as I studied. He's the light of the world. John 3:16 tells us, for God so loved the world. He's the light of the world. God loved this world so much that he gave us his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. Life aboard ship can sometimes be quite harrowing. There have been many shipwrecks on the Great Lakes, and men have perished. Our captain was here to make sure that whosoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. This is something we're going to talk about as we go along. We're going to make much of our captain, much of our Savior, the Lord Jesus. So some key reasons that a sailor should know the captain, just a few here. The first is that the captain is an expert in the conditions of the lake. He has expert knowledge of the shoals. A shoal is a shallow area of water. So if a ship is near a shoal, they could run aground, which is a whole other disaster. They haven't sunk, but they're stuck. And then he knows the hazards that are under the water. He's familiar with weather, the currents. I'm just going to tell you a quick story about my father, who was in the Navy and a helmsman on the Great Lakes ships. There was a child in our school when we lived at Lighthouse Beach, and he got caught in a current, and he got pulled under the water, and it was a terrible, terrible day. As news spread, people began to just stand at the shore and watch for the current to bring this boy back in, and it took a long time, and of course, the boy did not survive. My dad was very concerned about that and wanted to make sure that I have a brother and a sister, but I'm the oldest, and wanted to make sure that we understood the seriousness of the current. So one day he said to me, Julie, I'm going to take you out and let you feel the current. Well, I was familiar with the current, but I trusted my dad completely. It didn't even dawn on me that anything would happen to me because I was with my dad. My dad was 6'2". I was 7 years old, you know, so he was a very big, imposing figure to me and certainly capable of holding on to me. So we went out, and as we're going out into the water, I knew we were going out to water that was over my head. And he said to me, he's holding on to me, he said to me, we're going out over your head, and you may never, never, ever come out here again. He said, I'm going to hold your hands, and I'm going to put you under the water. And you put your feet down, and when you feel the water turn cold, and you feel the rushing on your toes, you squeeze my hands, and I'll bring you back up. Okay, so we went. Down I go, put my toes down, and I could feel that cold water, and I could feel the rushing. And I squeezed my dad's hands, and he pulled me back up, and he said, Julie, that current is helpful when needed, but it will It could be deadly, like it was for that little boy. You never, 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 ever come out here. I don't ever want you to get caught in the current. I could feel the strength of that current on my feet. I knew that was a danger. That was a hazard below the water. And I trusted my dad. I trusted his expertise. Going on, the captain is aware of the difficult passages. I mentioned to you that where we lived was near, well, I could see to the other side where Canada is. So as the water travels this way, we're going upbound, okay? We're traveling up the river and the lake and coming to the mouth of Lake Huron where that Blue Water Bridge is. On the other side flew the Canadian flags, and on the American side flew the American flags, and then there was a place on both sides where the flags flew side by side. We always considered Canada our neighbors, our friends to the north. And so as that ship navigates through that very narrow area, it can get hazardous. The shoals on the sides are close. The helmsman has to stay right in line. Often the captain will tap the helmsman. The helmsman knows if he's tapped out. That means the captain's taking over, because the captain is responsible. He's the ultimate authority, and he's going to take the ship through that very difficult passage. I always love that thought. That's what the Lord does for us. He walks with us. He navigates life with us. Doesn't mean we're never going to be in a difficult passage. We know better than that. We are often in a difficult passage. But Isaiah 43, verse 2. Let me get to my Bible here. If you'd like to look that up with me, Isaiah 43, verse 2. This is a verse I'm sure you're familiar with. When thou passest through the waters, I will be with thee, and through the rivers, they shall not overflow thee. When thou walkest through the fire, thou shalt not be burned, neither shall the flame kindle upon thee. We won't be consumed. I love the thought that my captain, the captain of my salvation, as he's called in Hebrews chapter 2, verse 10, he's with me. He's with me through the waters, through the rivers. They won't overflow thee, and I won't be consumed by the fire. The captain is with us. He's traveled the Great Lakes before. This captain, he knows. He's an expert at where these things are. They've been charted. That experience makes the crew comfortable and confident. Our great captain goes with us. He has been before us and behind us and beside us. He knows he's experienced everything that we have to experience in this life. He can be trusted. All right, the captain knows the exact weight of the burden of the ship. When those ships travel up to the Upper Peninsula to load iron ore that's used in making steel, that's a Pennsylvania connection. And when they're going up empty and filling in Lake Superior with the taconite iron ore they're like this. They look like little round meatballs. And they're loaded. The captain knows the exact weight of the burden. That load is called a burden. He knows the exact weight, and he knows that he does not want to go 1 pound, maybe a ton, I don't know. He doesn't want to go over the exact weight that ship can carry. He doesn't want to go under either, because to go under, then the ship isn't performing to its full potential. It's the same for us. The Lord knows the exact weight of the burden that we can carry. He doesn't load it up 1 ounce more than we can bear. We are told in God's word in Galatians 6, verse 5, for every man shall bear his own burden. Some of these verses, if you don't mind, I have them written down for time's sake. But I want you to know that he talks about every man will bear his own burden. And right above that, that we would bear one another's burdens. So those are two different things. When I'm bearing my friend Pat's burden, I'm sharing in whatever that heartache is, and I'm praying with her. I'm supporting her with prayer. That's different from bearing my own burden. We have things that we must bear in this world, in this life. But as we bear the burden, God tells us in Psalm, I'd like you to turn here, Psalm 55, 22. Psalm 55, 22 says, why don't you read this with me, would you? All right, let's read. Cast thy burden upon the Lord, and he shall sustain thee. He shall never suffer the righteous to be moved. So what the Lord is telling me there is, I have a burden in this life. I'll have things I need to take care of. I'll have things in this life that I will bear. But he says, give it to me. Not only am I going to give you a burden that's designed just for you, but I'm going to tell you that I'll carry it. I'll be with you. Maybe some of you have heard this poem before. This has meant so much to me in recent days, and it talks about the burden that we bear. It's called Lean Hard. Child of my love, lean hard, and let me feel the pressure of thy care. I know the burden. Child, I shaped it, poised it in mine own hand. I made no proportion in its weight to thine unaided strength. For even as I laid it on, I said, I shall be near. And while she leans on me, this burden shall be mine, not hers. So shall I keep my child within the circling arms of my own love. Here lay it down, for nor fear to impose it on a shoulder which upholds the government of worlds. Yet closer come, thou art not near enough. I would embrace thy care so I might feel my child reposing on my breast. Thou lovest me? I knew it. Doubt not then, but loving me, lean hard. I've had to lean hard on the Lord this past year. Just very quickly, last year it started out in a difficult way for us. Our daughter, who is in a far country, and then she's 45 this year. She had a terrible accident. She was coming down one of our big hills, swerved to avoid a cat, and hit a car, and her Jeep completely rolled all the way over. She was, thank the Lord, she survived, but she had many injuries. The policeman and the man who came to tow her truck said that she was fortunate to be alive. That came with a heavy burden. I was thankful my daughter was still living, and we rejoiced over that. But what ensued after that, as you can imagine, was difficult. It was heavy. Also, my mother, who had, some of you know, I've talked about this before, my precious mom. She has had congestive heart failure. All four of her valves were leaking. She's that tall. And as the years went on, my grandma, who came from England, was 4'10". So my mother was a little tiny package, but she was mighty. My sister and I called her the White Tornado because when Saturday rolled around, we had chores to do. And do you see, many of you are not old enough to remember this, the White Tornado commercial on TV, but for Ajax cleaning, please nod your head with me and say you remember, oh yes, my people. Bad hand, my people. The White Tornado was the mascot or whatever you want to say for Ajax, and he cleaned like a white tornado. He went like this all through the house, and it was just spotless. Well, that was my mom. We called her, Amy and I called her the White Tornado, and you didn't want to get caught not having your room shipshape when the white tornado came through. I say all of that with deep love. So my mom had a congestive heart failure. She had bladder cancer, and then the heart failure affected her kidneys, and she developed renal failure. So all year last year, many trips to the hospital, many trips to the emergency room, and I'm not going to labor over what that those illnesses do to us, but she was 87, and your body just can't handle that kind of trauma to it anymore. But I got to be with my mom many times last year. I would travel there and stay for 2 weeks and come home. So I traveled a lot to see her, and each time she would get a little, each illness, each time in the hospital took her down a little more. By October, I was there for 2 weeks and then came home. And I was really looking forward to seeing my family. I had been away from home a lot. And when I was home for a week, I got COVID. And it wasn't just the COVID where you have a cough and a cold. It was because I'd had that kind before, but this one put me down hard. I was sick all of November, all the rest of October and all of November and into December. At the end of November, doctors called from the hospital and said, you need to come. Your mom's in kidney failure now. And so those were hard days. And that burden was very heavy. And my mom, I just loved her so much. You know, there's no threshold or timeline on loving your mom and missing her when she's gone. Just because I'm 67, she was 87, she was 20 when I was born. I always thought of her as like a mom girlfriend when we got to be older. I'd say, Mommy, wait for me. Just let me catch up to you at 87, you know. That didn't happen, of course. And the doctor said, you know, she will go to sleep and she'll sleep a little bit more and then she'll pass away. And what the doctor said would happen didn't happen. And my mom lingered and lingered and lingered and lingered. And she didn't eat for 16 days. She barely drank. And my mom, when she came into the hospital, thought that she was going to be patched up and sent back out, which is what happened to her every time. And as the realization came to her that she wasn't, it was hard to watch her come. She wasn't in a lot of physical pain, but she was in emotional pain. And that was suffering for her and suffering for us. The Lord took her to be with him on December 10th. And then I was in Michigan the rest of the month of December as we had her funeral and then came home to my family. And I came home with heavy grief. And that was a whole other burden. You know, grief is like an unwelcome relative that just comes and sits there right in your way, you know. And you're walking through the day and you're taking care of your things and then there's grief. And you have to step over it because it just takes your breath away. Those of you that are grieving or have grieved know what I'm talking about. These burdens, they're very heavy. But what I began to understand in my grief, in all of that, was the Lord was very near. And I thought of that poem and I kept telling the Lord, Lord, I'm leaning as hard as I can right now. And he kept telling me in that still, small voice, I'm here. I'm here. He didn't take the burden away. My mom didn't live. No, the burden stayed. But he's there. He's there. And I feel that now that I've walked through that somewhat, don't ask me about my mom today. I'll be in a puddle. Those of you that still have yours, and if she's here, oh, I hope you squeeze her tight today. I hope you love her and call her and do all the things. But that's a tough thing. It's a heavy burden, and I leaned hard, and I'm still leaning hard, and he's still here. He doesn't say, now, Julie, that's the 21st time today you've said that to me. You know, he doesn't ever say that. And sometimes we, in our human minds, we think, oh, Lord, here I am again. Here I am again. He never thinks that. He's wanting. Draw near. No, you're not close enough. Come closer. Do you ever have your mom or your grandma do that? Get over here. I need a hug, you know. Sometimes you just need a hug, don't you? If you need a hug today, I'm a hugger. So, well, I'll take this off, and then we'll encourage one another with a hug. Hugs are healthy. All right, the next thing, the captain has absolute authority and responsibility, and he will not desert the ship or the crew. So this is important for that sailor to know about his captain. A proper sailor is also ready. Now, he's had an assignment. He's been given a duty. Duty doesn't wait until we become experts at our jobs, does it? No, duty calls, we have to answer. And that's something that the proper sailor is ready for. The duty may stretch us, and that is good. We may grow, and that is good. The proper sailor knows his job. He's been given a job to do, and the first thing that happens is he's well supplied by the captain. In John 10:10, God promises us abundant life. That's a great supply, wouldn't you say? In Ephesians chapter 6, we're promised the armor of God. Oh, I'm so thankful for the armor of God. I think often I need to put I need to put a sign right under the window by my side of the bed that says, armor up, right now, before your feet touch the floor. Get your armor on. Because our enemy, as a roaring lion, walks about seeking whom he may devour. He's ready to devour you first thing. I know that. I don't want to be devoured. And then in 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 3, I'm trying to pay attention to the time here too. So we're going to scooch along a little bit. 2 Peter chapter 1, verses 3 and 4. According as his divine power hath given unto us all things that pertain unto life and godliness. What are we given? All things that pertain unto life and godliness. What more would you need? Oh, wait, we're going to get more. Through the knowledge of him that hath called us to glory and virtue, whereby are given unto us exceeding great and precious promises, that by these you might be partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in the world through lust. We're given all the things we need to live in victory in this world, and we are given exceeding great and precious promises. But something I've started doing is writing down. We have a reservoir of precious promises in our minds, don't we? But I've learned about myself, and I have a planner that has extra pages. On those extra pages, since all of this happened with my mom, I've been writing down deep truths and precious promises so that when that storm comes, I can say, wait a minute, I know what God says about this storm. I can pull that out. I can encourage myself. I can refresh myself. So we have those. The sailor is ready, and he knows his job. And one more thing here as I turn this page. He knows the destination. No sailor goes aboard on his duty, on his ship, and says, I have no idea where we're going. I feel like that a lot in life. What do I have to do today? I have no idea where I'm going. No sailor ever begins a journey without knowing the exact destination. The idea is not to flounder our way through life, flounder around. You know what that expression comes from, don't you? A flounder fish goes like this. We don't want to flounder. We want to get on our journey. There's an expected destination. For us, it's the safe harbor with the captain. John 10:28 says, "And I give unto them eternal life, and they shall never perish, neither shall any man pluck them out of my hand." Our destination is sure and certain. I don't even have to wonder. It doesn't need to be a thought if I know the captain. We'll talk more about that the next time. The last thing I want to leave you with here is the proper sailor doesn't quit. You've heard that expression, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. I don't think that's a nautical expression, but it still works for this situation. That sailor, he's navigating the sea of life with the captain. Not alone, but with the captain. Going back to Isaiah 43:2, God told us, "When thou passest through the waters, I will be with thee. When you walk through the fire, thou shalt not be burned." We will be tested, but that testing proves us, helps us bear our own burden, and keeps us close to the captain. All right, we'll stop right there for now.